Ham. Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Minnesota Lesset, skilled construction laborers and union contractors working together, online at minnesotalaborers.org.
It's 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. They always say that hope springs eternal, especially during spring training when Major League Baseball teams and their fans can dream about the coming season. Sure, the season hasn't actually started, but why not dream after all? Your team could go all the way this year. Well, Twins fans have not had this luxury these last many years. Since their glory days 10 years ago, the Twins have gone steadily downhill, starting virtually every season knowing full well that they have no chance to make the playoffs. But this year might be a little different. If you believe the reports out of spring training, the Minnesota Twins may actually have a fairly decent team this year. Hope is back, be it ever so muted. And for that matter, the team's fortunes have improved at least a little bit at the state capitol in St. Paul. For the first time in 4 years, a bill has been introduced at the capitol to build the Twins a new stadium. And there are also separate efforts underway in both Minneapolis and St. Paul to build the Twins a new ballpark. However, opponents to the use of public money for a twin stadium have not gone away. They are already criticizing this new stadium drive as a misuse of public money. And today on Midday, we're going to take a closer look at what's being proposed and whether any of these new efforts have any real chance of succeeding. We've been joined this morning by Minnesota Public Radio sports analyst Jay Wiener. Jay has covered the stadium issue for years for the Star Tribune. Last year, you'll recall, he wrote a book about past stadium efforts titled Stadium Games, 50 Years of Big League Greed and Bush League Boondoggles. This hour, we'll also be talking with several other folks involved in this year's version of the stadium debate. And we invite you to join our conversation as well. We're talking about the new proposals to try to build a new ballpark for the Twins. And if you have a question or a comment, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. Jay, thanks for coming in this morning.
Sure.
Why such a flurry of activity at this point? Things were pretty quiet, more or less, and interest in the Twins is certainly not peaking in any way, shape, or form. What's going on?
Well, it was about time for the Twins to take another run at getting a ballpark built. In terms of the timing, over at the Capitol, things have got to get out of committees by the end of March. And also there were various groups in Minneapolis, too, one that was put together by the Twins, one put together by the city council that came up with the reports towards the end of last year, which provided a foundation for, some bills over at the Capitol. We really haven't stopped the process. There was, bills 96, 97. There was the vote in St. Paul in 99. So I just view it as part of the ongoing process and not a new big thing.
During the course of the hour, we're certainly going to zero in on the specifics of these some of these various proposals. But in general, best you can tell, is there something substantially different, new this time around that we haven't heard before?
I think there are a couple of things that seem new to me. One is this notice given to the other owners in the game that this stadium won't be built unless there are some changes in the economics of the game. The language is pretty vague, and so I think that it probably needs to be nailed down a bit more. But there is some talk about getting the economics in line. We can get into that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, there's the creation of a revolving fund. I have written about in the past an idea of an endowment for ballparks into the future, because the life of these things is so short, and every 20 years we come back and talk about how we're going to fund this. There is a revolving fund in place that could fund a football stadium. Now, the source of the funding might not be the one that's going to work, but the concept of having a fund in place all the time, that's new. The 50-50, more or less, private-public funding concept is new for the first time in a bill. It was proposed by the Twins-sponsored committee last fall. Another group put together by City Council in Minneapolis said it should be all private funding. Mm-hmm. But the 50-50 breakdown is new because it has implications for other teams in town, i.e. the NFL team, which has been saying it won't even go that far. With city money for the site selection, it will actually tilt more towards public funding than private. The other thing that's new is that the dome is presumed to be dead in this bill. for the first time, we see that the dome will go away if and when a new ballpark or and a football stadium is built, and that land will be sold and that money used to pay down the debt on the new ballpark. And finally, I think what's new is that the bill is short. It's only 9 pages, and in 97, there were about 30. There's a lot of things absent from this bill, too, and we can get into that later. But mm-hmm. to me, those are the new things. I think there are some big things omitted that people might want to think about putting back in, though.
This year's stadium bill is sponsored by DFLer Dean Johnson of Willmar in the state Senate, excuse me, and Republican Harry Mayers of White Bear Lake in the Minnesota House. The first committee hearing for the bill is tomorrow night in a state Senate committee, and Senator Johnson joins us now from the state capitol. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Gary, and good morning, Jay. Nice to be with both of you.
Thank you.
Given all the other important issues that you folks have to wrestle with, why bring up a stadium bill at this point?
Well, let's set the priorities in the stage. Absolutely number one is the budget, the balancing of the budget, rebate checks from the surplus, tax cuts, funding schools, colleges, University of Minnesota, nursing homes, absolutely a priority with the legislature and with the governor. Number two, the stadium bill and past bills have been worked on for some time. And it's been said, why would someone get involved in a ballpark or an arena bill? Because I take the words of former Governor Anderson seriously from the other day. We're about a state, we're about a community, and bettering a community. And to have a good community, you need many things. Good schools, recreation, you need all of the entities that people have come to enjoy in this state. Second of all, or third of all, in the negotiations, I said, we're not going to pursue this idea if there is going to be general fund money. There is not general fund money in the bill. What Jay talked about at the very beginning is very, very important. If this bill were to pass, reach the governor's desk, and he were to sign it for the building of a new $300 million open-air, roof-ready stadium in the seven-county metropolitan area, the first thing that has to happen, the very first thing before any dirt is turned, is that Major League Baseball needs to get their house in order. The owners will have to vote on a new revenue-sharing plan, and the players' union will have to agree to it. That's the first thing that has to happen. And then we have a three-judge panel that has to look at that to see, in fact, if they're doing what the Blue Ribbon Commission, chaired by Senator George Mitchell and others, put together. Then the site selection of nine people, one from each of the eight congressional districts. The chair of it is the governor's own commissioner of planning and long-range planning. Then the next thing is very important, that the Twins and the private money must be put forward, 50% of it, $150 million. All that has to happen before we get into the other 50%. And I will admit there are some issues revolving around that money. But we are at a starting point. We're not using general fund money. And I just think it's a good discussion to have. Mm-hmm. And we're going to begin tomorrow evening and move forward and just see what happens.
Do you think, Senator, that the public is open to the use of public money? Not general fund money, as you point out, but public money is involved here, would be involved. Has the public changed its mind about that?
I'm not sure they've changed their mind. There's anger. There's anger about rich owners, and there's anger about high-priced paid ballplayers. I'm in that category. I think that professional sports are have out of line, and we need to rein in those salaries, and we need to have revenue sharing. And the public, and let me give you an example of why baseball. If this initiative is to move forward, first of all, this new arena or ballpark would be available for every college and university and state high school league in Minnesota rent-free. We need to make sure that our young people have access to it. Second of all, I think that X number of seats on game day need to be at the $3, $4 level and pop and hot dogs a buck apiece, so it's affordable for average people. No doubt about it. That needs to occur. It is, after all, America's pastime. And I think that it adds to the quality of life of our state. If we didn't think so, we certainly have other things we could be about. Finally, it's patterned much after the Xcel Energy arena, the Wild Arena in downtown St. Paul, which certainly is a major success due in great part to Mayor Norm Coleman. And so we have done much of the work in that regard. Here's a couple of issues that are remaining.
Mm-hmm.
The naming rights. The naming rights, what is a naming right worth? Well, we're doing some research on that area and the whole flow of revenues that would take to operate such a stadium.
Okay. Actually, Senator, you know, this is for the public a better deal maybe than for the Wild, because the Wild didn't put any cash in up front. But my question is this, and the Pioneer Press had a good editorial today on this topic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you and others have a problem sort of admitting that the interest-free loan is, in fact, a public subsidy to the team? You can look at it different ways, but it's been sliced and diced. Pat Sweeney today in the Pioneer Press said the number $40 million is sort of free money. What's your take on that, and why isn't that just an outright gift? Over 20 years, it's only $2 million a year only, but why not just say what it is?
Jay, you're exactly right. And if we're to proceed on this, we're going to be up front. We're going to tell the entire story. And call it as you will, it is a subsidy at this point. Money has value. It has present and future value. We call it interest. And mass that against then other corporations, other businesses. Do they receive subsidies? I think if we're honest with ourselves, they do. They do. And we're looking at those various kinds of things. There's many subsidies from federal and state government that we do, in fact, have. Does that make it necessarily right or wrong? But you have a very good point, and we can say that. Sure. And if that be the case, then we need to figure out perhaps a different revenue stream to pay for the debt service.
Senator, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate being on and trying to bring the issue to the public.
DFL State Senator Dean Johnson from Willmar, who is sponsoring the stadium bill in the Minnesota State Senate. Jerry Bell is with us. He's president of the Minnesota Twins. Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning, Gary.
It seems like all of these proposals, including the one at the Capitol, call for a significant amount of money from the Minnesota Twins, $150 million, give or take, $10 million here or there. Is Carl Pohlad really ready to spend that much in real money for a ballpark?
Yes, obviously, Gary, I wouldn't be there testifying and talking with legislators without having the comfort of discussing this with Mr. Pohlad ahead of time. He fully understands what his responsibilities are in this bill and what risks there are. And in fact, I remember I said to him, we'll have to borrow at least or contribute at least $100 million to this thing in cash. And he looked at it and he said, well, that's true, but I'm also responsible for repaying the loan. And it looks to me like I also have to make sure that the business community comes up with some money. So I think the responsibility of the team is more like $200 to $250 million.
Mm-hmm. All of the proposals talk about this basic change in the economic structure of Major League Baseball, and Lord knows there's been a lot of rhetoric about that, but do you get the sense that the barons of baseball are actually going to change their ways?
Well, I can speak from some experience with that, and also what I've heard Mr. Selig say, the commissioner of baseball, is that economic reform in the game is his number one priority. We have an opportunity to do that this year because the contract with the Players Association ends at the end of the season, and so we need to negotiate a new contract anyway. This economic reform needs to be approved by the owners of baseball, three-quarters majority of the owners, and it also has to be approved by the Players Association. So there's a blueprint for that. What it means, it's contained in the Blue Ribbon Panel report that I think Mr. Johnson or Senator Johnson referred to earlier. So we know exactly what it is, and then the bill calls for a three-judge panel to determine at a later date, once the contract is signed, as to whether or not the philosophy of that economic reform is approved or not approved.
Mm-hmm. Given our weather, Mr. Bell, can the Twins survive and prosper in an open-air ballpark without a roof?
Well, we did for many years, as you know, at Metropolitan Stadium in Detroit and Chicago and Cleveland and others. Weather is different than ours, but not a lot different. They've enjoyed success in an outdoor ballpark. We would prefer to have a retractable roof, but given all the requirements of the legislation and the guarantees that the team is required to perform, adding another $100 million, the numbers just don't work.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, in the 97 bills, and even I think in the St. Paul bill of 99, there was talk of an ownership stake on the part of the public after a new ballpark were built because the franchise would go up in cost. Would you guys be would that be something that you would should be part of this bill again, do you think?
Well, I don't know if it should be part of the bill or not part of the bill, but a bill does call for $50 million, well, for $150 million of private funds, and we expect that our portion of that would be about 100. So anyone who would like to weigh in on the other 50 would certainly be welcome to do so, and we can talk about ownership or whatever kind of equity may come along with that. We, of course, would be open to that. You know, I would like to say something about this interest-free subsidy, so-called. First of all, you know, we compare ourselves a lot with the Wild arena. We know that the state has done that. We also know that it turned out to be an enormous success for the city of St. Paul. I don't believe that there has been a negative article written about the arena or the way in which it was financed since it was opened. So I think that fact has been established. But it only tells half the story. I read Pat Sweeney's story this morning, too, first thing out of bed, actually. And notice where a professor from the University of St. Thomas said that has a cost of $40 million. But that really only discusses half of the story. We have to remember, in a new ballpark, the Twins would need to pay the average payroll in the league in order to be successful. And with the economic reform and with the new ballpark, we would have the ability to do that. That being the case, the average payroll today is $65 million. We now pay 17, or we did pay 17 last year, so a significant increase. The value of that to the state of Minnesota's general fund over a 30-year period at the current personal income tax is $262 million. And that's just a fact. And some people choose to ignore that fact. But if the cost of the interest is $40 million, but the upside to the general fund is $262 million, and anyone can do the math on this. I used a 3% inflation factor for player salaries, and Jay, you know they've been going up at a rate much faster than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a $222 million upside to the state. So if but for the stadium, that money's not there.
Mr. Bell, critics will say, gosh, if this is such a great deal, why don't you folks just build your own ballpark like they did in San Francisco?
Well, we don't collect the taxes, the state does.
But just, you know, just to follow, do you think that a totally a ballpark that was completely a pull-ad cash could survive here in the state, or would work, Jerry?
No, I don't believe that the economics of the game, even in a new system, will provide enough local revenue for the team to be able to pay the average payroll to be competitive and pay the debt service on the ballpark. We don't need a lot of funding from the state, but we do need some help in financing from the state, and I think this bill is more like financing than funding.
Jerry, if I just one other quick one, and that is, I think a little bit of a ghost that hangs over this is this whole concept of contraction, and it's come up in sports columns in where if there's no new ballpark, the Twins will be contracted, and there won't be a Twins team, there won't be an Expos team, perhaps. Is there anything to that? Have there actually been formal meetings, and is that a real possibility, or is it a threat against the players and folks here that a ballpark has to be built?
That's something the commissioner has asked us not to comment on. The only thing I can say is we would oppose contraction.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
Okay.
Jerry Bell, who is president of the Minnesota Twins. Jay Wiener, Mr. Bell brought up the story of the Minnesota Wild. Mayor Coleman has mentioned it frequently in relation to the kind of a plan that's being put together in St. Paul. Is that a good model? Apparently, from the outside, it does look like the arena in St. Paul has been wildly successful. It has spurred, well, it's actually gotten people downtown, spurred some new bars and the rest. Is that a good model to say, well, gosh, you know, these things really do help the economy, these stadiums and the rest?
I think that generally speaking, most scholars would say that long-term the economic impacts are pretty flat on those things. We're in the first year of this Wild deal. I think we have to wait a few years, you know, to see if it goes well. In terms of the state, I don't think that there's any dispute that it will not increase the tax coffers of the state that much based on how big the economy of the state is. For the city of St. Paul, we still have to check those to see exactly if tax collection has gone up or not. But again, you know, the Wild model is actually less favorable to the public than this Twins model is, to the extent that the Wild team put up no money up front, and the Twins are being asked to put in $100 million or be responsible for $150 million. So in some ways this is a little bit harder for the team than the NHL's team was. But certainly the Wild arena is something that the Twins and others will go back to as an example of a state-of-the-art arena that people have enjoyed. Of course, you remember there was some opposition to that, but the Wild arena kind of passed through under the radar of the Twins debate of 97. And also the Wild arena was pitched at that point as a community center as much as an NHL arena. It's harder for the ballpark to be called a community center. You can't have as many concerts. You can't have as many dog shows. You can't have as many state tournaments as the Twins would have. So there are some things that are not the same.
Mm-hmm. Chris, your question, please.
Yeah, good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
I'm wondering if Jay would know the answer to this or if you would, but if a new stadium would use any public money, would the proposal be put to a public vote? And if not, why not?
Under this bill, Senate File 1857, there's no public vote. It would be my understanding that the city of Minneapolis would be selected as the site, and if it had to provide the site and preparing for the site, I would guess that that would trigger the ordinance, the charter ordinance that was passed in 1997 that requires that any use of public dollars of $10 million or more for pro sports has to go to the voters. Mayor Norm Coleman in St. Paul has called for another vote in St. Paul for city funds being used. But right now, this Senate bill has no public voting component.
Dick, your question?
My question was about the financing of the stadium. I've heard many proposals, but nobody ever says who gets the title to the stadium. If the state put up half the money and somebody else put up half, would it go 50-50, or does it revert to the Twins, or does it go to the state?
Good question. Who owns it?
This bill says that the public owns it, and it's unclear to me exactly if there'll be a new agency similar to the Metropolitan Sports a facilities commission that would, but it would be a publicly owned building. Therefore, it would be there'd be no property taxes to be paid. So that's a big nut that the team wouldn't have to pay.
Mm-hmm. Jim, your question.
Hello, I'm a little suspicious of this competitive imbalance business as a way for the ownership to try to get leverage to build new stadiums. I don't think there is that much competitive imbalance in baseball. You have small markets such as Oakland, which are among the best teams in the league. You've got large markets. Or you've got small markets such as Cincinnati, which under the commissioner's sharing agreement would be a player drafted from the best teams of the past half dozen years, the worst teams would get those players. Cincinnati would fall victim to that, which is in a very small market. I think this is really a pretty attractive market to baseball. I think all you need to do to put people in the seats in this market is to put a winning product on the field. And I think there's a lot more to it than teams with money to spend. There are teams with a lot of money to spend, such as Baltimore, that don't seem to know what to do with it.
Okay. How critical is that component about requiring structural change in Major League Baseball, Jay?
How critical is it to this bill being passed, you mean? Or
that and to actually making, if a stadium were built, making it succeed, keeping the team here, and, mm-hmm. and making sure that the team is reasonably successful over time.
Well, I think he has a good point to the extent that, you know, the Twins were successful in 87 and 91 when their payroll was the average in the big leagues, and so they weren't the highest paid team. And he is right, the Oakland A's have done well, and some other small market teams have done well. But I think that it's relatively clear that the economic structure of the game, in which the local media dollars in the big markets are retained by those teams and are not shared with the small teams, does put teams in small TV markets like our own at a shortfall type spot. The Twins make at the most $8 million a year out of the TV and their other broadcasts, and the Yankees are in that $50 to $60 million, and the Yankees don't have to share any of that except under the current sharing arrangement that goes through all the teams, but they don't have to share all of that. So while I agree that on the field, competitively, it is possible for a small revenue team to break through, the statistics over time do show that teams in that upper quartile of salaries do exceedingly well, far better than the teams at the bottom quartile, and I don't have it in front of me, but over the last 10 years, the World Series have generally been won by teams in the big cities. Now, historically speaking, baseball has been relatively non-competitive. I mean, the Yankees won all the time in the 20s mm-hmm. and the 50s as well. But this is a way. I don't think it's a red herring, though, and that the way to get a ballpark built is just to say we'll get the economics in order. And in fact, it's being said now by the politicians, not by the Twins, although it is political cover for the Twins, who internally could say, look, folks, we won't get a stadium unless you guys change the economics here. So I think it's a positive thing. I do think the language in the bill right now is pretty darn vague, however.
Minnesota Public Radio sports analyst and Star Tribune sports writer Jay Weiner is with us. He's the author of Stadium Games, 50 Years of Big League Greed and Bush League Boondoggles. He's joined us this hour to help us take a look at the stadium legislation that's been introduced at the Minnesota State Capitol. Again, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your questions here in a couple of minutes.
When Afghanistan's ruling Taliban recently destroyed ancient Buddha statues and artifacts, the world spoke out.
They've survived for 14 centuries, and it's tragic that they should be destroyed now.
I'm Juan Williams. A talk with Afghanistan's roving ambassador about the Taliban, why it destroyed the statues, and Afghanistan's many challenges. That's the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins at 1 o'clock here on Minnesota Public Radio. Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra with contralto Ava Podlesch performing Handel and Gluck arias at 4 Metro locations, March 21st through the 24th. Tickets at www.thespco.org. Just a reminder, you're listening to member-supported Minnesota Public Radio, and our thanks to all of you who are loyal and generous members. News headlines now. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good morning. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled today that a search warrant or consent is required for a hospital to test pregnant women for drugs and give the results to police. The 6-3 decision stems from a case out of South Carolina. The court says such drug testing by a state hospital violated the Constitution, even though the goal was to prevent women from harming their fetuses by using crack. In another U.S. Supreme Court decision today, the justices ruled employers can force workers to take job-related disputes to arbitration rather than to court. Today's 5-4 decision is a win for Circuit City Stores, which had been sued by a gay former employee over alleged harassment at work. Investors are concerned about reports of possible job cuts at Procter & Gamble and higher-than-expected rise in inflation. Stocks are mixed in morning trading as investors push the blue-chip Dow Industrials down. The technology-heavy NASDAQ index is modestly higher. A lawyer for a Vermont sheep farmer says the government is overreacting. Federal agents seized the man's flock of sheep this morning out of fear they may be infected by a form of mad cow disease. The farmer's lawyer calls the seizure a rushed judgment. In regional news, the tax that now funds Minnesota's health insurance program for low-income workers would be eliminated under a plan heading before a House committee today. Under the plan, health providers would have to pass along any savings they reap by ending what critics like to call the sick tax. North Dakota's Emergency Management Director says preparations are underway at the state level for spring flooding. Authorities say the greatest threat appears to be in the southern parts of the Red River Valley. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for mostly sunny skies in the north, partly sunny in the south today, highs ranging from 38 to 45 degrees. Right now in Moorhead, clear skies and 34. Skies are cloudy in Rochester and 34. Duluth reports clear skies and 45 degrees. And in the Twin Cities, a report of haze with a temperature of 38 degrees. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 24 minutes before noon. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the stadium legislation that's being considered. It's been introduced now at the state capitol. And the other efforts that are underway to try to find a way to build a new ballpark for the Minnesota Twins. Jay Wiener is with us. And joining us as well now is Mark Oyes, who is a key member of an organization called New Ballpark, Inc. The stadium bill at the Capitol calls for a mix of public and private funding, and that proposal being discussed in St. Paul does as well. But business leaders called New Ballpark, Inc., they've been trying to come up with a plan to build a ballpark for the Twins that relies almost exclusively on private funding. Mr. Oyes, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, and good mid-morning to you and your listeners, Gary.
How close are you folks to actually having enough money to pay for a ballpark with private money?
Gary, our plan was to try and cobble together ways to incent investors into a ballpark project, working in partnership with the Twins, that would get us as far as possible. Or when we started out, we perhaps were a little naive, and I'm sure Jay is nodding his head there, about how far we could get. We had some incentive mechanisms, development rights that we thought could be brought to bear. At this point, we're concentrating pretty much on a financial instrument that will attract investors who will recognize a yield. It will put together a pool of money. 60% of that pool will be invested in the private markets, and 40% will be brought to bear as a subsidy for ballpark construction. How far we're going to get with that, we just don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Senator John Marty said yesterday that the effort at the Capitol to build a stadium at the state level with a mix of private money and public money has essentially undermined your effort. Would you agree with that?
No, I disagree with that. We've had a plan. We're going to work our plan, and while our effort has been focused on seeing how much private money we can get, combine it with the Twins and put it on a table and see how much we get. When people ask us, could this effort work with what the Twins are proposing, we have to say, yes, it could work with what the Twins are proposing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mix, you know. I'm not sure what the results will be of this effort right now, but I wouldn't say that it's undermining us.
Mark, this is Jay, and I'm just wondering how much you're tied to Minneapolis City Hall as well, and folks there. How much do you view this bill as a St. Paul bill? That is, with the Wild loan money being part of the foundation of the ballpark funding. Doesn't it look to you as if this is a setup, that's a strong word, for St. Paul to get the ballpark rather than you?
Well, that's for, you know, Jay, I'm not trying to duck the question, but that's really for Minneapolis and its political leadership to decide. They're going to have to go over there, and there certainly are some elements that on the face of it would lend some weight to a St. Paul proposal. But Minneapolis has some able leadership and some able legislators over there and supporters from all over the state. And they're going to have to work that out so that if this community competitive process does emerge out of the bill, that they're positioned so that they can compete.
You're talking about building a little bit smaller ballpark than the one envisioned in the state legislation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's sort of proof that positive that we haven't coordinated efforts with the Twins. The site that appears to make sense to our leadership, and it was more or less blessed by the Citizens Committee appointed by the Minneapolis City Council to vet what our proposal was, is a site that wouldn't even accommodate roof ready. It's a site on the western edge of downtown Minneapolis.
And once again, any deadline for you folks as when you can say, well, yes, we've got the money, or no, this isn't going to work?
We're just about to enter into an exhaustive process calling on potential investors, corporations, and individuals with the capacity to invest. And we'll know fairly quickly, 5-6 weeks, whether or not we can. Our goal is to get at least to $50 million to invest in a ballpark project, and we'll know 5-6 weeks out if we can get there.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Public affairs consultant Mark Oyes, who is working with a group called New Ballpark, Inc., which is trying to find funding, private funding, for a new Twins ballpark. Jay, all of the proposals talk about, quote, other private sources of funding.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world would those be? Once you have the Twins, and if you have a public component, mm-hmm. there's other private sources. What is that?
Well, even the Twins' money is sort of pledged money, as I understand it. That is, they're responsible for having that raised. And Senator Johnson raised one of them. That is the rights to name the ballpark. So a corporation a la Target Center or XL Energy Center will pay $3-5 million a year over 20 years. To have their name on that, there's $100 million perhaps right there.
Mm-hmm.
A concessionaire may or may not pay some money up front in order to get inside to sell the hot dogs and the soda. The people who buy the suites, and you would want companies to have all those 85 suites or so sold beforehand, perhaps they would agree to a 10-year deal up front for $100,000 a year, which is $1 million, and suddenly the Twins and the ballpark have got 80 $1 million pledged on that. So there's lots of ways to get, you know, bankable money from these private components. I think I know that the new ballpark plan, though, is more of downtown businesses and banks to literally invest in the stadium and to use some land around it to build other things. Which suggests that theory is that the stadium itself can be an economic engine. And I think that, you know, that is a bold effort.
Well, opponents to the stadium legislation at the Capitol, of course, are already gearing up, as we noted at the beginning of the program. Among those leading the charge is Republican State Representative Phil Kroenke from Shoreview. Representative Kroenke is on the line now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Fundamental, it seems, to those who keep talking about and supporting some kind of public involvement in a stadium effort is that the Twins are an important asset to the state of Minnesota, one worth saving. Would you agree with that?
Well, certainly I agree that they're a valuable asset to the state of Minnesota. The question becomes how valuable and how much is the state willing to put into the stadium construction puzzle in order to retain that asset?
Mm-hmm. Do you think the state should put any money whatsoever into a stadium for the Minnesota Twins?
I'm not opposed to the state being a party to the process. In other words, enabling legislation, if it is a contribution which the state will truly regain over time. But interest-free loans, which are not repaid or certainly impede spending on other important issues, that becomes a broader question.
Mm-hmm. So something along the order of, well, the state might issue some bonds to make the financing a little easier, but that would be pretty much the extent of what you would see as a legitimate public involvement here?
I think that has been the message that I've received over the last 4 to 5 years, that this issue has been debated, voted on, surveyed, etc.
Can you why do you suppose this has come up again? I mean, the public has spoken fairly loudly on this issue.
I believe the reason that it's being promoted again is because Mr. Pohlad and the Twins realize that there's a real possibility that the Major League Baseball owners could vote within the next year to perhaps close some franchises. We've seen, obviously, expansion of Major League sports franchises, both baseball, football, hockey, over the last decade. I think there's a real possibility that there could be action taken by the league to restrict the number of franchises, and Minnesota would be one of those franchises that might be on the bubble.
And if that were the case, still no good reason to put any public money into a stadium, so far as you can see?
Again, I'm not opposed to public some public money. The question is how much public money, and in this situation, the latest proposal start with is $100 million of state money on a interest-free loan. Generally, neither the state nor any other institution is in the business of handing out interest-free loans. And another component is that the state gave an interest-free loan to help construct the hockey arena in St. Paul, and now the advocates of building a baseball stadium are looking at diverting that money, which would flow back to the state, to building the baseball stadium. So not only did we, in the case of the hockey arena, give an interest-free loan for construction, now the same people who were supporting that legislation are saying that now they don't want to pay back the loan.
Representative Krenke, Twins President Jerry Bell said here that if the state provided the interest-free loan and all the other money in the state package, which goes to about $150 million, that over the course of the 20 years, because of the minimum salary requirements that would be established, that his calculations are that income taxes from players would mean $262 million to the state coffers. Does that mean anything to you, and is that worth, does that get the state back what it's going to contribute?
Well, Jay, as you know, when we do economic development proposals, whether it be in tax increment finance districts, whether it be grants to businesses coming to the state of Minnesota or relocating within the state of Minnesota, these are issues that are often discussed. I think it's very, very difficult to track the economic dollars generated by a specific business, a specific industry, even baseball, and say that, well, these monies should be earmarked. In other words, taxes that are being paid by baseball players should be earmarked and said, this is economic development. Has anyone done a study that we did not have a hockey team for a period of years? Do we then say that there was an economic shortfall because we didn't have a hockey team? Jay, you know more about these sports issues than I do, mm-hmm. and the economic impact that they may generate on a community. Very difficult study to do from a tax standpoint, and I think a very dangerous precedent that you get into if you start saying specific industries, specific businesses have an economic benefit to the state, and therefore we should grant them special economic or tax breaks.
Mr. Krenke, thank you so much for joining us. Good talking with you.
Thank you.
State Representative Phil Krenke, who is a Republican state representative from Shoreview and one of the more outspoken critics of this stadium legislation. Let's get at least one more caller on here, Jay, before we wrap up. Pete, go ahead, please.
Sure. Kind of pick up on what Representative Krenke said, talking about the Twins being a team on the bubble. Given that the Twins and other teams like the Expos and Kansas City could go out of business if Major League Baseball doesn't get its house in order, so to speak. Is it too much to ask for the players to be so altruistic to cut their own salaries to keep 50 players in the league? And is it too much for the owners to reduce what could be an increase in their franchise value by keeping the Twins and, say, the Expos or Kansas City around? And I'll take my call off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, I think it is too much. I mean, we can ask, but I think that as these contract talks play out after the season and before next spring, we'll get a sense of how much the players are willing to cap their salaries. This ball players group has not ever wanted to cap their salaries, and we'll get a sense of how much the big market owners are prepared to share their extra cash with groups like the Twins and the Expos. They have done it a bit, but I think that the kinds of changes that this bill anticipates would be quite profound, and it would mean the Yankees would have to share their TV money with everyone, probably. I'm not really sure all the ways that it could be done, but that's what I believe this bill is asking, so it isn't too much to ask. I'm not quite sure that the answer is going to come back with the players saying we'll take less.
Jay, you said there were some things that aren't in this bill that are worth noting that people should be thinking about as this debate unfolds.
Yeah. I went back to the 97 bills, and there are some key things. One is, you know, the central part of the 1997 bill was that the state, the public, would get a part of the team if and when a new ballpark were built, because the value of the franchise goes up so much. And that isn't talked about in here. Jerry Bell kind of sloughed that off as a possibility. But I hear people talk about that. In fact, a senior member of the Ventura administration last week said, isn't it cheaper to just buy the team? I think, too, that there are no requirements on the team to sell a certain amount of tickets, sell the suites, sell all their inventory like there were in the earlier bills. There's no guarantee here that the stadium could be successful before it's even built. And I think the Twins would actually be in favor of that, frankly, because it does show that there are fans out there wanting to buy the tickets. And I think that'd be a good idea to require that the team sell 22,000 season tickets, 85 suites, before it's on there. There's no local ownership clause either. In the Timberwolves deal with Glenn Taylor at Target Center, if he wants to sell the team, the city of Minneapolis has a year to find an owner in town. And I think that that's important based on the fact that absentee owners in this community have not really been the best or don't understand, you know, the politics. And I think what Representative Krinke raises about the Wild loan, so people understand, the Wild is paying back a loan, an interest-free loan, based on the interest-free loan that the state gave the city of St. Paul. And that money that's flowing into that fund is going to be redirected to help pay for the new Twins ballpark as part of this bill. The Wild is doing quite well now, but the NHL is going to have its own problems in the year 2005, I'm pretty sure, when their player contract is up, and there's no salary cap in hockey as well. And I worry, because I do worry about these things, that it is possible the Wild could default on that loan at some point. There could be a year where there's no NHL. I'm just thinking worst case. And I think that's something we have to pause about, of whether you want to take money from a fund that relies on the Wild's success to pay for the Twins. And finally, the Vikings are absent from this bill. I mean, there's this talk that the dome would be dead when this ballpark is built. But the Vikings always are around these bills. Historically, they've frankly kicked the Twins when they've been down. It sounds like they might be folding up their tent right now this year and aren't going to try to get their own new facility. But before this is over, I'm going to guess that we're going to hear about football as well.
I was going to say, given how popular the Vikings are relative to the Twins, does it surprise you at all that the Twins have suddenly moved to the front of the parade?
Not at all, because the Twins' lease at the Dome can expire after next season, and the Vikings have a lease through 2011, and I think if I were a lawmaker, I frankly wouldn't be talking about a new stadium for somebody who's locked up for 10 more years.
Jay, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks.
Talking with you. Jay Wiener, Minnesota Public Radio sports analyst, Star Tribune sports writer, and the author of Stadium Games, 50 Years of Big League Greed and Bush League Boondoggles, a great book which recounts the past stadium efforts here in the state of Minnesota. It takes you back, gives you some nice history as to how we got to where we are. Joining us this hour to talk about the new stadium legislation at the Capitol, and the efforts in Minneapolis and St. Paul as well.
Make your reservations today for the Mixed Blood Theater presentation of A Jew on Ethiopia Street. With wit, grace, and dry humor, the production explores the life journey of Ethiopian Jews through the tale of a gifted young athlete. A Jew on Ethiopia Street is at the Mixed Blood Theater March 21st through April 8th, and Minnesota Public Radio members receive a discount on tickets. For reservations, call 612-338-6131. At 612-338-6131.
Quick reminder, over the noon hour today, we're going off to the National Press Club to hear from mutual fund guru John Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Group.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 21st of March, 2001. It's the anniversary of the Battle of the Somme in World War I. It was on this day in 1918, General Erich Ludendorff launched the offensive, the biggest German offensive of the year, with a five-hour artillery barrage, trying to drive a wedge between the British and the French and drive the British to the sea. The Germans advanced about 40 miles, creating a bulge in the British and French lines. And in less than 2 weeks, almost 500,000 men were lost to both sides. It was on this day in 1617 that Rebecca Rolfe died on a visit to England from the colonies. We know her as Pocahontas, and she was the daughter of the chieftain Powhatan. When the settlers came into Jamestown and there was trouble between the Indians and the settlers, she helped to settle it. She married John Rolfe in 1614, and 2 years later they went to England, where she was a great celebrity and a beautiful woman, an ambassador and prized in society, but she caught either smallpox or pneumonia and died. It's the birthday of poet Phyllis McGinley in Ontario, Oregon, 1905, who began writing light verse when she was in her early 20s. She won the Pulitzer Prize in 1961 for her collection Times Three, also wrote novels for young adults. It's the birthday of showman Florence Ziegfeld, born in Chicago, 1869, who, starting in 1907, put on his Ziegfeld Follies in New York, featuring scantily clad showgirls, extravagant sets and costumes, and musical comedy numbers. He launched the careers of Fanny Brice, W.C. Fields, Will Rogers, and Eddie Cantor. And it's the birthday of composer Johann Sebastian Bach, born in Germany in Eisenach in Thuringia in 1685, the 11th child of a couple who died by the time Bach turned 10. He was raised by his brother, Johann Christian Bach, who taught him organ and clavier. Bach worked as an organist in Thuringia, composed sacred music. He was court organist and a member of the court orchestra in Weimar. And then, for the last 27 years of his life, he became a cantor, a church music director, and choir director in Leipzig. In his own lifetime, he was such a renowned organist that his talent for composition was overlooked, and he was not fully recognized until at least half a century after his death. Here's a poem for today by Raymond Carver, entitled Aspens. Imagine a young man, alone, without anyone. The moment a few raindrops streaked his glass, he began to scribble. He lived in a tenement with mice for company. I loved his bravery. Someone else a few doors down played Segovia records all day. He never left his room, and no one could blame him. At night, he could hear the other's typewriter going and feel comforted. Literature and music, everyone dreaming of Spanish horsemen and courtyards, processions, ceremony and resplendence, aspen trees, days of rain and high water, leaves hammered into the ground finally, in my heart, this plot of earth that the storm lights. Poem by Raymond Carver, Aspens, from All of Us, Collected Poems, published by Alfred A. Knopf. Used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Research by Richard Mosher. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.